the OTB Podcast Network.
Let's say hello to Andy Mitten for the first time in a little while. Andy, how are you getting on?
I'm okay, nice to talk to you. I think it's a month since I was in Austria when Manchester United played their last game a month ago today. That game behind closed doors in Lask. I've been in lockdown. I'm in with my family in Barcelona, and I can't leave the house basically. But all things considered, everything's all right. I can go to
You can go to the shop.
Yeah, but you need to take ID. You need to keep the receipts when you've been in the shop. And I'd love to go for a run. I'd love to go out on my bike. I'd love to go out with my children. But all things considered, we're fine. It's changing the shape of journalism. There's people are still reading an awful lot. Other people are just running out of money to pay for content. I'm writing lots of historical pieces, catching up with administration and stuff. And I probably travelled far too much in the 6 weeks before the lockdown. I went on eight different trips in 4 weeks. So it's not been that bad seeing my family. I'm sure everyone's got issues, and probably a lot of them have got far more issues than I've got.
What has it actually been like in Spain, and what are the conversations that you've been having with neighbours and people across the country? Because Spain was obviously really badly hit very early on, and it doesn't look like it's peaked yet. It looks like the difficulties that they're having are continuing.
Yeah, it's very pronounced here. The rates are the highest in Europe, along with Italy. And at one point last week, Catalonia and New York had the steepest rises of anywhere in the world. So Madrid has been the hotspot. And I started looking more into the figures in a detailed way last week. And you start to learn that people in the poorer areas are suffering a lot more because they live in the most dense housing. Maybe lots of Spaniards don't have gardens. They live in small apartments. And it's bad in Catalonia as well. And some very well-known people have died. The former president of Real Madrid, Josep Guardiola's mother, and the Guardiola family were very, very well respected. I remember going to their small town a couple of years ago to do a piece on him, and really is not an attractive town, Sant Depor, where Guardiola's from. And the people were lovely, and they said, oh, do you want to go meet his mum and dad? And it was a Sunday afternoon, and I thought, I'm not just going to knock on the door. So I didn't. Maybe I'm a bad journalist for that, but there's real worry in Spain, and the lockdown, it is a very strong one. People could argue that, you know, if I take my children out for a walk and I'm with them, the chances of them catching the virus are extremely minimal, but we're just following the advice. And like everybody, I hope for a return to normality. I was going to Barcelona, Napoli, and then that was put behind closed doors, and then it was cancelled. The Valencia-Atlanta game, I think history will judge that as being a big carrier of the virus, because lots of Valencian fans, players, journalists came back from Bergamo, Milan, and they introduced the virus into Valencia. So there's all these crossovers with sport and with football. The media is actually doing quite well. People are still buying newspapers. Spaniards listen to a lot of radio. They watch a lot of TV. Barca's political problems are rumbling on. I've suspected for a long, long time, and more than suspected, you know, I've had it well sourced from good people, that Barca are really struggling financially. And this is coming to the fore now. They've got a huge wage bill. They've bought really badly. They bought three players above 100 million who haven't really worked out for them. And they've got to sell. And I know people at quite a high level within the club who for a long time have painted a picture of, we're basically trimming everything back just so we can pay Lionel Messi. And that never seemed like a stable business model to me, although he's clearly the best player in the world and he's brilliant. Man United, there's still interest there. Some footballers I find are keen to talk, others are not keen to talk. I spoke to footballers in Italy. I spoke the other day to Federico Macheda. He's in Athens. It was the anniversary of his goal against Aston Villa, and he was fine talking. But I've spoken to a couple of other lads who play in Italy, a couple of lads who were on loan from Man United, and they just want a low profile at the moment. And I suppose you've got to respect that. there's much more important and worse things happening than the resumption of a football season. So I'm still writing. We're producing a United We Stand. We're taking a huge gamble with that. And I'm alarmed at the postage rates to Ireland. It's nearly £3 for us to send one there. We've got a lot of readers in Ireland. But we're printing it. The Royal Mail's working. The lads who normally sell United We Stand outside Old Trafford, they're going to get their commissions by sending it out. And we just need people to buy it. And if they don't, then we can't carry on during the lockdown. But people are reading a lot more. They're telling us that's what they want. And I'm sure they're watching this. And there's still a big thirst for information, mainly about the virus. But maybe sport, not for the first time, is a release.
For sure. And I think that it will be an even bigger release when it comes back, even if that is just behind closed doors. We might get into that in a moment, Andy. But I just have one question on Barcelona. And you mentioned there the extortionate wage bill that the club now has and the financial trouble that it seems is coming down the line or is perhaps already here. What is going on politically at the moment? Because it seemed to me last week or the week before we were reading a story about Barcelona players not being willing to take a wage cut. And then this week we see Lionel Messi coming out saying that was nonsense. I'm willing to give up my wages to ensure all our staff can be fully employed and fully paid.
They're both right. Basically, the players have held the club to hostage for years. They've realised that if they went public when at the point of negotiating a new contract, they tend to get a new contract. You know, for decades, I looked at Barca as this perfectly run football club where, maybe perfect's the wrong word, but fans had power, you voted in the president, and the closer I get to it, it's like the closer you get into the sun. There's so many shifting plates of power that politically it's quite unstable. And this model where the president and the only people who get voted in as presidents, they're not real fans. It's rich people who've got the contacts to run a campaign. And I just see it's an extremely political club with factions all the time. And I lean away from it the more I learn of it. And I don't think it lends itself to long-term projects. The redevelopment of Camp Nou still hasn't started because whichever president does it on his watch and spends 300, 400, 500, 600 million, they're going to have to pare back spending on the first team, which means there's going to be probably a lack of success. And no president wants that on his watch. And what I've also seen in the last few years is the rise of the fans of the super club, incredibly impatient online fans scattered around the world, whose viewpoints are completely different from people who actually go to the games. And you see these Barca fans online, and if they're not top and winning every game 5-0 and winning the Champions League, they're absolutely furious. And it's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. And I think that held sway in sacking Ernesto Valverde, well, his team were top of the league, having won the league last year and the year before, it is just ridiculous. The bar has been raised so high that I don't think any football club in the world can reach these levels. There's tension between the players in an ageing team. All them players that Messi, that Piqué, Busquets, Alba, they're all well over 30 now. They have a huge amount of power. I don't think that the current manager can even start to play the type of football that he wants to play because the players will just turn around and say, this is not how we do it here. So it's a problem. They've been at the top of the table and they're still a very good team. But I do wonder when Messi moves on, and I've done a big piece looking into the Masia and the youth system. That's not what it was either. Still a huge club, still extremely attractive. Barcelona's a great place to live. But I don't think it's a financially stable model. And the virus has just exacerbated the issues at Barcelona, which are coming to the fore now.
Literally just about to make that point that things weren't amazing before COVID-19, and this is going to make things a hell of a lot worse. You've mentioned the financial impact that it is going to have and how that will exacerbate things. But also politically, everybody's going to be a little bit more wound up. These stories and conflicting reports don't help things. We saw Lionel Messi call Eric Abidal out earlier on in the year, which obviously raised a few question marks about how long more Lionel Messi is going to hang around if he feels that he's not getting the respect from the hierarchy. What's your view on that?
I'm really torn on it because part of me thinks it's greed, doesn't need it. And part of me thinks he is the best player in the world. He should be paid the most money in the world. But at what point when he, I remember interviewing him years ago and he said to me when the interview was finished, what's happening at Manchester City? And I said, well, why don't you just ask Carlos Tevez? And the fact that he hadn't done, why is he asking a journalist? And it was off the record. And he was very interested in the money which Manchester City were paying. So he likes money. Obviously, he's entitled to that because he's a great player. And I think he's a decent person. He's not the intellectual that Eric Abidal is, who is not Lilian Thuram either, who's extremely bright. But I've interviewed Abidal a few times. He's a bright, bright guy. And it's funny how football moves quickly, because I remember at the start of January, and one of Abidal's former teammates who was at Man United said, Eric's in Dubai, he's never leaving there, he's so happy there. And then a few months later, he rocks up as Barcelona's sporting director. Patrick Kluivert's in there now. What are they overseeing? An aging team? A club where the youth system is not producing the talent that it did do? One where Lionel Messi, what is he, 33, 32, 33? He might be able to play because he's Messi. He might be able to do a gigs, but that explosive pace is a really important part of his game, although he's got so many other qualities to his game. But I'm uncomfortable with it. In answer to your question, I'm uncomfortable with the way that I think they use English clubs, like Sergio Ramos did with Madrid, as a potential suitor. And then they go back to their own club and say, well, I could get this in Manchester. Now, it's brinkmanship. They are entitled to do that. It's a dog-eat-dog world, but they do that. And it just makes me think all this more than a club stuff. It's a little bit hollow. You know, when they're charging visiting fans more than any other club in the history of football for away tickets, I just think, more than a club, are you? Yet you're charging €129 for Man United or for Tottenham or for Manchester City fans to visit your stadium. Stuff like that tarnishes their image.
That's very interesting what you mentioned there about Lionel Messi and his interest in money and his interest in Manchester City, because what they can bring financially, like if he's that interested in money and they can pay him what he wants, and he's also got a great suitor in Pep Guardiola, it does seem that this talk about Messi and his connection potentially with Manchester City isn't just idle talk anymore. There is actual substance to it, and there may be real consideration on Messi's part.
This was a long time ago when he asked me that question direct. Okay. In fact, Carlos Tevez was at the club, and that was my first response. Why don't you ask Tevez? I think he always knows there's a suitor there. I also think that he's very happy living where he is. His children are very settled. They're taught in English, bizarrely. And I think his wife's settled. They live in a beautiful part of the world. They overlook the sea. His neighbours are his close friends, Luis Suarez, Sergio Busquets. He's a hero, and you can argue to this day that Barca, along with Madrid and Barcelona, are the biggest club in the world. And Barca fans will argue that they are the biggest club in the world. They're playing in the biggest stadium, playing to huge crowds, still an exceptionally good team. Nobody will be absolutely stunned if they won the Champions League, but they're not the Barca of old. They're definitely not the Barca of old. But then I also think it's unfair to compare the current team or any team to Guardiola's great sides, because I've never seen any team as good as Guardiola's Barca side. When they blew away Real Madrid 5-0, when they beat Manchester United and ruined a few days for me in Rome and then at Wembley, they were absolutely outstanding. They were incredible. And I remember being at Wembley in May 11, and they just won the European Cup. And I'm reporting on it as a journalist, but obviously I'm from Manchester and I'm a United fan. And I bumped into Andy Cole, and he just said, tampered with. They tampered with us. They tampered with us. I'll never forget that. And they were outstanding, and they've still got great players. But they bought badly. They've wasted a lot of money. They've got this lopsided business model. Yes, they're doing well in terms of getting sponsorships by following the Man United model, of getting sponsors from around the world. But I'm not convinced, and I'm sure you can tell by my tone. Mm-hmm. I still would think that Messi would stay. I mean, what's he going to do with the money? He's made for life over and over and over and over again. But it's going to the club and saying, I could get this elsewhere. I'm just not that comfortable with it. And also, Manchester City have got to stay within the financial fair play rules, because they've been in a little bit of trouble in that area as well in the past. Yeah. But, you know, Guardiola, I think, is going to stay at City. I think his family are back in Spain. And he obviously loves Pep and he loves Messi. The feeling's mutual. But I would still think, unless there's a mighty fallout, which there could be, he'll stay in Barcelona.
Just a last question then, Andy. You've touched on the importance of having conversations like these and the importance of thinking about football right now. That will translate into wanting football back sooner rather than later. And if it's done in a safe way, I don't think anybody can really disagree with that. If it's not too much of a burden on the health service of various countries, and if all the players are kept in safe quarantine or whatever it may be. How is it looking in La Liga at the moment? I know Javier Tebas came out the last couple of days and said it could be May, it could be June, it could be July, but we could look at a run of games behind closed doors. Premier League Chiefs obviously looking into something similar, and Bundesliga teams training with social distancing during the week. It does seem that this will come together in a situation where we might have something to look forward to, even just on television alone.
Yeah, Tebas was the first person to actually put dates to it, and he gave three options, and I think the first one's optimistic, but I'm not a medical specialist, I just don't know. And like everyone, I'd love to see football back. Behind closed doors, I'm really torn on that. I was in Linz, Austria for that game, and it was awful. It was awful. But I accept, played on television, it would be entertaining. People would love to see it. Most football fans do not have the luxury of going to the stadiums, and they would watch, you know, Liverpool against whoever or Manchester United against whoever on TV and take a lot from that. But I think the football without the fans at the games is nothing. I think atmosphere is integral to it. And I was really uncomfortable watching that Man United game in Austria. It was horrible. I felt more sympathy for the host team than for United. They lost out on their big day, their payday. It was awful. It was absolutely horrible. And I don't like behind closed doors football. Now, is it better than nothing? Yeah, it probably is better than nothing. Needs must? Yeah, probably. But I'm not entirely comfortable about it. But I can also see that if tens of thousands of people are gathering at one stadium, then there's a potential for the virus to resurface. Maybe just limit it to teams who don't sell the ground out where there's plenty of space and you can social distance. I could make some easy digs at clubs here, but I'm not going to.
I think you did. Andy, great to have you with us. Great to talk to you again, and stay well. Thanks a million, man.
Thank you.
It's Andy Mitten there, editor of United We Stand, and we look forward to getting our hands on the next copy of that whenever it is released. And best of luck to everybody putting out content at this point.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.